You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, August 31st, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal but not metaphorical shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's Casual Friday. You know what that means. Cliff Schechter. And also joining us to give us a movie recommendation, although I think I may have forgotten to tell him that he's supposed to give us a movie recommendation, because he was at the RNC all week as a correspondent for the David Letterman show, Mr. Andy Kindler, the very funny Obama bot, Andy Kindler, will be joining us. But before we get to any of that, folks, just a little bit of house cleaning. Last night, we did do a live broadcast of mocking the speeches. I won't say that we mocked Clint Eastwood. I think we were just sort of shocked, and that registered. We also had a 25-minute interview with Senator Katherine Harris. Some people think she's Janine Garofalo. You'll have to decide. That is all available as a member's bonus. Ooh, sorry, freeloaders. You won't be getting it, but members will. The only way to absorb the final night of the Republican National Convention, and it's only available for members. And it's really not, you know, it's just a way to say thank you for supporting the free 40-minute a day show. So in other words, not only for you freeloaders am I giving you a 40-minute-a-day free show. Some days it's a freebie Friday. Last week it was. Probably this week it will be. I don't know. But on top of that, I'm actually thanking the members for allowing you to have a free show on your behalf. What next? Am I supposed to come and do your yard work? I mean, honestly, become a member today at majority.fm. We have a lot of people who had to cancel this past month because of hardship, and we need new members to come up and step up to the plate and help out. Now's a great time to do it. And then we can talk about the yard work. But first, we need to go and play the Cliff Schechter theme song because Cliff Schechter is here.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is Cliff Schechter gearing up for the DNC, apparently, where he'll be doing a daily broadcast. Tell me, Cliff, tell us exactly what you're doing so that we can post a link and people can listen.
Sure. Well, first of all, thanks, as always, for having me on, Sam.
Thank you for doing it. What are you doing? Are you working out?
I'm sorry?
Are you working out while you do this?
I was sitting back in my chair.
Okay, it sounded like you were on some type of elliptical machine or something.
Well, I want to keep up with you. I want to stay in shape.
Right, no.
And so I try to work out while I'm doing this. Or I may just start yelling at my elliptical machine.
There you go.
I might pretend that there's going to be too many of those jokes today. In any case, what I'll be doing is hosting DFA, Democracy for America, the great progressive group started by one Howard Dean. I will be hosting their live coverage. Live streaming coverage at their website with Chunky. If you're a DFA member, you should be, you know, if you're not, at least getting their emails. And we'll be sending out some YouTube clips from it. And just so I can make sure that you can't say no, you have agreed to come on and help me do the Wednesday and Thursday morning, sometime between around 9:15 and 10, we're going to go over what happened the night before.
That's right.
Which should be fun. So you get more Sammy that way too. But yeah, so I'll be doing that from about 9 till 4. At this point, we've got, in addition to wonderful commentators like yourself and Ms. Liz Winstead and Mr. David Schuster, among others, we also have, we have Senate candidate and Congresswoman Mazie Hirono coming on. We've got Senator Ben Cardin. We've got, of course, Howard Dean. We've got a number of congressionals, big-time congressionals. Congresswoman Donna Edwards will be coming on.
Let's not get carried away. I mean, we'll put a link to your site here, but, I mean, let's leave.
Okay. You
want to leave some for the game, buddy. You don't want to... just a little tip.
Yeah, there's a lot more.
It's called
that
the tease.
People don't know.
It's called the tease. It's
okay.
Not a take off all my clothes, copulate, get married, and then raise grandchildren.
So we're gonna be frank here. When I should have just been showing some ankle, I showed some sack. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly.
okay, I just want to break it down.
You're gonna take it easy here, buddy. I mean, let's go. We got a show to do here. My God.
let's talk about
the Republican National Convention, because this was let's start from the beginning and work our way through, and it's, because I really do think it's halftime in America, Cliff, and I can't help it. That's the thing, is that the whole convention...
And everywhere, people are just talking to empty car seats, hoping the auto industry will come back.
I don't know if people paid attention to the last night, but we should just say that everything that we talk about, the entire Republican National Convention, very well may be completely and totally mitigated or overshadowed by a 10-minute, I can't tell. It was like a dream. Like, I don't have a sense of how long the Clint Eastwood presentation was.
Well, I couldn't believe it was really happening while it was happening. So it was kind of hard to keep track. I mean, even at the very beginning, he was sort of bumbling over his words. And I thought to myself, is he either not have a teleprompter or didn't rehearse this? I mean, you'd think, and I'll be very clear here. I love Clint Eastwood movies, and I think he's brilliant at what he does as a director or whatever. And I don't even frankly understand why he was there, being that if you look at anything he's said publicly over the last half dozen to a dozen years, he's a pretty libertarian-ish guy who's come out for gay marriage, who's pro-choice, who actually believes in some gun controls, like closing the gun show loophole, some of the stuff I do.
Not only does he believe in a woman's right to choose,
against Afghanistan,
he doesn't believe
against
in a woman's right to choose. I mean, he believes in abortion rights so much that he doesn't – when he's anti-choice, he actually – what he's saying is like, I'm going to force Sandra Locke into having an abortion, according to her, I should say.
Right. I mean, he's just, I don't really understand. I mean, up on stage, even the jokes that were connecting, which were few and far between, or at least the points he was making, which also were rambled from one to another, were about how going into Iraq was wrong. And you're just like, do you know who you're talking to? Do you understand
right.
which convention
no,
you're
No, he said going into Afghanistan, I think. I think he said...
He said that too. He said both. He criticized both.
It was stunning. I mean, I share... Look, I will put my ability and my love of Clint Eastwood movies prior to 1981, let's say, against anybody.
You're Dirty Harry, guys, and you're Dirty Harry and cowboy.
Yes, exactly. And
but I even think, I mean, Unforgiven.
But I also play Misty for me.
Still one
I've
of my
seen.
All-time favorites.
What's that?
I said, still for me, The Unforgiven is one of my all-time favorites. I mean, I think
The
you
Unforgiven.
Don't like it?
Oy, that is a cheap knockoff of that.
Not so good.
No. Okay, I mean, Unforgiven was really Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid, and Altman did a much better version of that. Unforgiven was okay.
I understand. I still think he and the acting in that between him and Gene Hackman and Morgan Freeman, I love, and of course Sir Richard Harris, I thought that those four guys were just amazing. But okay, right. We can agree to disagree on that.
I will tell
yell
you this.
At you like you're an
yeah,
empty chair.
I can identify any Clint Eastwood movie, and I'm going to include Paint Your Wagon Red, and I'm going to include Play Misty for me, by hearing, in some instances, just the gunshots if they're Westerns. Like, I can tell you which of the three spaghetti Westerns it is by the tone of the gunshots. That's how much I've watched these movies. And I knew
he was
a Republican.
Impressive.
I knew, you know, Mayor of Carmel. I have no problem with him showing up at the convention if he wants to go there. But I'm actually angry at the Republicans now for what they did to him in my mind. Like, you know, like,
I agree. I think they sort of, he's 82. I feel like they exploited him.
It was irresponsible. I mean, and on some level. But at the end of the day, look, he knows what he's doing. He screwed up.
But who are the people that also that are supposed to sort of protect him and protect his image?
I kind
of think that they deserve to be lashed about, too. And look, a bunch of these Republicans, in the end, there are a few conservative nutballs. Your John Voights. And, you know, I wasn't waiting for Victoria Jackson to come out and start yelling at the wall. I thought that was the next skit, but it didn't happen the way I was hoping. But
President
general,
Obama!
The Muslim! Most of these guys who come out and...
At a plant or something.
Yelling at waste baskets for being full and that kind of thing. I thought next, I most of these guys, and there's your Chuck Norris's too, but most of them from Tom Selleck to Clint Eastwood, it's sort of that disconnect that I find often among libertarians. You know, most of these conservative Hollywood types, Schwarzenegger's another one, claim to basically be libertarians, but I guess they only care about the economic side of it.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not even criticize, it's not even, I mean, who cares about Eastwood and where he's coming at in this? I think the real issue is, at the end of the day, what this is about, I mean, it was a very stupid move to separate, to put this guy in primetime on national television. It was a wild card, and it came out of a certain amount of desperation and a very strange, you know, quality. I mean, the same reason, like, I think why Romney picked Ryan, and we'll talk about this as opposed to Rubio, but this was like an aging guy, and I'm not talking about Eastwood, I'm talking about the Republican psyche, like an aging guy who is so desperate that he doesn't even have the confidence even to take a Viagra. He's got to get the pump. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's getting a vacuum pump to get himself up. And those things always can end up horribly awry. You know, like, oh, my God, I did it wrong. And now I've got to go to the hospital to get the pump off my member. I mean, it really had
off
that.
Off my wang.
Right. I mean, it really had that quality of, like, they're so desperate to show how muscular they are, even though they're sort of back on their heels. And, you know, we saw, like, the groundwork being laid over the past couple of weeks, like that Kevin Williams piece in the National Review about how Romney was more of a man because he had boys.
Right.
And Obama, there was something wrong with him because he just had girls, and all of this sort of, like, you know, legitimate rape. And there's this sort of this very quality of this sort of, like, this sort of,
it's,
you know,
simple.
Old
Sam,
guy
it's,
who
it's
goes
old
to the
white guys are losing their country.
Yeah.
And Clint Eastwood is, let's be honest, I like him a lot. You like him a lot. I guess we're at this point kind of middle-aged white guys.
Right.
But he's, you know, for old white guys from the who you know, the people who know those movies in and out, like you're talking about, that I'll admit I don't know some of the earlier stuff as well. But these guys grew up on that, the stuff in the 60s. I mean, even Clint Eastwood in the 50s, you know, and so to them, this is their America. This is the same America that thinks, oh, the ladies were asking for it if they get it. And, you know, that's where legitimate rape, I mean, you're exactly right. It's the psyche of these people that have seen for the first time a majority of babies born in this country, a minority, who have seen, you know, states like California that was a bedrock of conservatism, a multicultural place that has completely changed and is now a bedrock of liberalism, and many things like that. And you know, Texas is headed in that direction. Florida's already got a head start on Texas. You know, these places are changing. changing, and clearly sort of reminds them of the way it used to be. So if you went to like the Freeport boards and places like that, you'd see this is a different country than the one the rest of us live in. It's what we always talk about, the silo that these old white conservative guys live in, which, by the way, you know, old and white and conservative, not guys, but old white conservatives, you know, or I guess we should say white, is 89% of the Republican Party, according to Gallup. So this is who they are. And you're right. Maybe to them, that made a lot of sense. I only brought up the libertarian point earlier just because I always, that's just a personal thing of mine. I find it fascinating with a lot of the sort of more celebrity libertarians that they seem to always come down on the Republican side. That's just a personal point of fascination as to what they think libertarians and whatever. But I agree with you. That's not worth getting deeply into. It's more just, why was he there? And beyond, you know, the psyche and the rest of that, they could have had him up there making them feel better about themselves, that they're still muscular and they're cool and not they're sort of these fading old white guys that need Viagra just to get up in the morning. They could have had him on at a different time if you got
the sheer inanity of
having him on at 10 o'clock at night. You know, I mean, the picture of Marco Rubio, who gave a fantastic speech, even though he lied a lot and, you know, whatever, but is always been known as a great speaker since he got on the public scene a few years ago. Imagine him giving the speech leading into the Romney video, leading into Romney.
Yeah.
That's what it should have been.
It's because of that lack of confidence. I mean, there's a quality about this that it's like, you know, that sort of, I mean, I know everybody, I feel like I've heard this story 100 times, somebody's dad. Older dad is at a restaurant and is like, you know, sort of like getting like overly aggressive with the waitress, you know, and it can go either way where it's like, yeah, the guy's like in his mid-80s and he's winking at the waitress and it's a little bit embarrassing. But then wait a second, why is he giving her his number? You know, oh gosh, now we got to go give like an extra tip to the waitress because this is just really uncomfortable. And there was just a whole quality of just sort of this, like this desperation of putting Eastwood there, like, we're going to prove, like, we got our mojo back, and we're going to prove to everybody who thought that Clint was saying, you know, give Obama another chance during the Super Bowl. I mean, it was just so pathetic.
But that's it. They feel like an old guy who can't get a hard on. I don't think there's any better description of it. Yeah. And you can sort of see it in the flailing of Mitt Romney, you know, in recent weeks when he gets so defensive about Bain. All the things he kind of thought, because let's face it, his whole life he's thought he's achieved everything on his own. You know, he built it himself. And he's this powerful guy, and he feels very powerless right now because he's been sort of exposed as this dorky loser that nobody really likes. Even the people in his own party stood up and mentioned his name few and far between. And I agree with you, but I think his psyche of who he is very similar to the psyche overall of their party, which is why you see them lashing out, which is why they're so angry. You know, their country's being taken away from them. And when they say that, they don't mean it in any logical way, because the truth is, as we've discussed a gazillion times here, you know, the 1950s, 60s, 70s was the spirit that sent Neil Armstrong to the moon when we were all working together and when we were trying to improve racial relations and when the government was seen as being a force of good in society, you know, and when tax rates were at 91% at certain times and north of 70% the entire time and the rest. So it's not really that, you know, it's not really that they want to take the country back to that. They want to take it back to this old feeling of white guys were in control. And you could kind of flirt with the ladies at the office and make sexual comments about their breasts and no one was going to come get you for it. And you could, you know, you could be the tough guy and walk around and act that way. And, you know, you were in charge of your kingdom, your household and the block around you. And there weren't all these other people speaking different languages and claiming that they deserved equality too. And that's what it's all about in the end. And these guys feel like they're losing because they are. Demographically, they're on the wrong side of everything.
Well, I mean, look, so, the reality is that it is true that they are, listen, there is a zero sum quality to this. And as women move into the workforce and begin to earn, we're maybe at 77% of what men do, I guess, at this point. And as black people move into the workforce and start to, you know, at least incrementally have same opportunities, that means that white guys who always had this advantage because their playing field was narrowed, are some of them are going to lose. I mean, that's just the reality of it. And, you know, it's there is a quality of, like, when they say we want to take America back, they're, well, yeah, you did lose part of it. You did lose that thing where you got a tremendous advantage because competition was much less because certain elements of society were completely shut out. And that's just the reality.
They want Mad Men again. Part of the reason, I mean, obviously a lot of us like that show, but I'm sure a lot of them look back and that was, those are the good old days.
Made a great, what I think is one of the most brilliant points I've heard all week about the speeches, that when Ann Romney got up there and said, I love women, she went on to sort of like list a bunch of things that connected women together. And everything she listed was actually not being a woman. It was actually being a mother. And it was an amazing, I mean, it was an amazing insight because, again, it
why do you think they're losing single women? Because they have no understanding of single women.
Well,
it's all married women.
It fits into their notion of what women are there for.
That's exactly right. And I think that, and that's the other thing that's so interesting about this convention. So that leads me, that's a great segue to another great point, which is because of this defensiveness, but also the accepting of reality that they can't win without women who have turned massively against them. They're down by, 15, 18 points, maybe more in recent polls. They're down by 40 points right now among Hispanics. I mean, John McCain did terribly, you know, when he got 34% of the vote, and right now Mitt Romney's sitting at 25, 26%. But even if most of the undecideds went his way in those recent polls, he'd still end up a few percentage points below McCain,
right.
With it. So this completely disjointed convention, which could be seen no better than the night before last night, when Ann Romney's speech on love and women are important, whatever, and then Chris Christie gets up on the stage after probably downing a few T-bones on the way, and talks about what a real man and love doesn't matter at all. It's about truth telling, and the rest. And government doesn't do anything for you. Of course, Chris Christie's dad, was in the army, which as I remember is a government job, and got the GI Bill, but we can ignore that because Republicans always do. But the point being that even in the same night there, that was disjointed. How many times do we have a Susana Martinez or a Marco Rubio or Romney's son, Craig Gregg, whatever his goofy name is, who's fluent in Spanish, yell out, Spanish platitudes to the audience. But the next moment, it's almost like, well, we just did that. We just pandered and we feel so weak about it. Now we're going to be strong again. So send out Clint Eastwood or send out Chris Christie or send out whatever. I mean, Mitt Romney, half his speech was like begging women to vote for him.
Yeah.
But then, the rest of the time, I mean, so it's like in terms of a theme, they're so disjointed because they have to pander to women and Hispanics and do things they don't really believe. But then the other half of the time to make up for it, they got to sound like tough guys.
Like this whole Todd Akin thing has really sort of got me in a mindset of there's just a completely different narrative in their minds. And I don't know, frankly, that from a conservative voter's perspective, if what Christie said and what Ann Romney said were actually contradictory, because she's a woman and that is what she should be talking about, love. And he's a man and that is what he should be talking about, respect. And that even though the idea that, well, wait a second. No, of course. Of course, that's not a contradiction because he's a man and she's a woman. We look at this and go, hey, we don't sort of gender specify the idea, right? There's an idea of what is important is not necessarily one that is, that is gender identified. There's no, love is not necessarily a female idea and respect a male idea. Those ideas.
You can admit that you love people in your life, Sam?
No, not me personally. I mean, I personally, I don't feel comfortable with any of that. But I'm just talking.
Intellectual level. He kind of came off as a jerk, so I didn't really get that.
But I think
it's all love. See, I love you, Sam, and I can admit that.
Well, that's very uncomfortable for me, and we're going to have to move on. No, but the point being that I don't know that it was seen as contradictory, but for the rest of us who sort of don't hold that sort of fundamentalist worldview, that sort of quasi-Talibanic worldview, it seems like a complete contradiction.
I can understand, and I think there's a great point you're making there. I still feel like, and I think there's definitely some truth to that. I still also feel like, you know, it wasn't just her. It was Kathy McMorris Rogers and Kelly Iode. And I mean, it wasn't just her speech. It was just so constantly they were pandering. In Mitt's own speech, he mentioned women so many times. And, you know, how great they are and how what they do is more important than what men do. And they don't think any of that crap. And, you know, they don't think any of that stuff. It's just a matter. And so it's almost like it hurts them deep down inside where their male pride is. So they've got to go back to later exerting control and being tough guys. And so that's it. You may be right about that. It may be that Ann Romney's speech fits in. I still think there are elements of her speech that were sort of that we're still pandering to women, but I understand what you're saying. Maybe it's a little less sort of clear when it comes from her. But most of the men who stood up, including Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney, had to sort of pay homage to how great women were and how superior women were. And you know they don't think any of that crap. Of course they don't, you know, but they've got to do it. And they hate it. They hate that they have to do it. They hate that they have to stand up and speak in Spanish, and they hate that they have to do all these kinds of things, you know? I mean, so it's, I don't know. I find it very interesting. That's all. It made it very disjointed, and again, that you combine that with the Clint Eastwood thing, and a lot of people end up leaving, you know, the next day is talking about things that you wouldn't want them to talk about. I think it's a huge opportunity lost for them. It doesn't mean that they won't get any bump, and to give Mitt Romney credit, he's got a very low ceiling because he's not a particularly good speaker, and he gave, I think, as good of a speech as you'll get from Mitt Romney. The same thing with Paul Ryan, who's not a lightning, you know, a guy that lights up a room, but he is comes off as an aw shucks nice guy when he's the guy that'll hit you in the back with a hatchet, you know, wants to literally asphyxiate Medicare and Social Security, and he came off as sort of at least somewhat likable, if not charismatic. And there are a few people like Rubio who gave phenomenal speeches from a charisma point of view, if not from an honesty point of view. So you did have all of that, to me, the disjointed message combined with the Clint Eastwood thing, combined with people not talking about Mitt Romney, but talking about how awesome they are so that we can have this nice primary, you know, in 4 years between all these people that actually want to be president and assume Romney's going to lose. I just think that hurt a lot of it. I don't understand what Romney's people were doing, because you would think they that in this important event, they would vet this stuff. They would vet Eastwood, but they would also vet other people's self-serving speeches that mentioned Romney like two or three times.
Yeah, I mean,
that's what I would have thought.
Yeah, it was very. I think there was a lack of competence, and I have to say that I haven't really dug into the ratings that much, but apparently, like on the second night, they lost 17 million viewers compared to night two of 2008. And then the big story, I guess, yesterday was that yesterday the big story was that Boo Boo, Honey Boo Boo's ratings topped the Republican National Convention. And I don't even know who Honey Boo Boo is, but I think it's just Honey Boo Boo. I think she's like a pageant.
She was a kid on Toddlers. She was a kid on Toddlers and Tiaras, and her mom is so crazy that they gave them their own show. Her family had their own show.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I don't know what is.
Oh my God.
I don't really know what is worse. Like, you know, it's just horribleness versus horribleness, and we're all going to hell. And God, I don't know. But
you know who else they have there, which I think also fits the Clint Eastwood thing, which is hugely another huge part of it. Ruggieri spoke, and hero of the 1980 Olympics. Think about that for a second. Like, their sports hero is a guy that beat Russia, see, very key there, and showed how strong America was. When did he do it? He did it 32 years ago. He's in his 60s now, I think, if not older.
He's probably in his 50s.
Well, maybe. I don't know. It's true. The guys in the Olympics are young. That's a great point. He's probably in his 50s. But still, you know, it's a great – it just tells you where the mindset is. They're not thinking about what happened, what's going on now. They're thinking about, remember when we stuck it to the Ruskies in 1980? I mean, you know, this is it's the same Clint Eastwood demographic, you know?
And right. It's wasn't that stuff. Also – I think Reagan was just coming in at that point too.
Yep.
I mean, so that was part of 1980
is literally
like,
if you were to –
that was part of
pinpoint
the whole Gestalt
the year of orgasm for the Republican Party. That would be 1980.
And I personally thought, well, there was two things I had in terms of Ryan. I think Ryan, this convention was a net loss for Ryan, frankly, because you got that. There's not that many people watching the convention who don't already have an opinion about Ryan, right? The Republican base loves him. The Democratic base hates him. Those are the people who are really keying into the conventions, I think, for the most part, politically, you know, sort of people who are already politically. If 50% of the country knew who Paul Ryan was, I think we just lost Cliff. Hold on. We're going to get his voicemail.
Hello?
Hi, we lost you.
So, I know.
I don't know what happened. But the point I was making is if 50% of the public knew who Paul Ryan was before the convention, I think it was that 50% that was probably paying attention to the convention anyways. And so the thing that I think hurt Ryan is, the reason why I think it's a net loss for him is because I think he hurt himself with the establishment Beltway media. I mean, I think that he got so hammered for lying so much in there that I think he has made himself a little bit more toxic with with the establishment media that thought he was sort of this darling wonk guy.
Right, and I think you're exactly, because that was one of the main reasons he was picked in the end, was that because the Bill Kristols of the world, the geniuses behind Sarah Palin, said that this was the guy and he was a thinker and whatever, even though, you know, we've gone over what Krugman said about him being a fraud. He's not. He draws things on pieces of paper that don't add up. But yes, and I think you're right. I think among the non sort of conservative ideological Beltway media, people that were more willing, you know, the centristy media, to say he's a real thinker and whatever, I agree with you. I think that must have been shocking because he didn't fudge stuff and he didn't, like, you know, exaggerate or lie by omission. He flat out lied right on things that he's been told before are wrong and are clearly and factually wrong, like December 23rd, 2008 being the last day of the GM plant in Janesville. The one that where, you know, and the problem with him is when he tells a lie like that and makes it sound like it was Obama, he reminds you of a couple of things. One, he reminds you of what a hypocrite he is because he supported the auto bailout, Mr. Small Government, who doesn't believe in bailouts. Number two, the guy who hates stimulus money and the rest went and personally lobbied for funding to reopen that plant. And number three, he reminds you about how the guy at the top of the ticket wrote an op-ed that said, let Detroit go bankrupt, which would have not only literally destroyed the economy in Michigan, but 1 in 8 jobs here in Ohio are reliant upon the auto industry, and a good deal of jobs in places like Wisconsin and Minnesota. And so all in one, by lying, he opens this can of worms, and I've seen a number of pieces written in sort of the usual sort of establishment outlets that have called him on all this stuff. Yeah. I think you're right. I think it's inevitable that it's going to hurt him.
And it was a real miscalculation because, you know, the best he could have done was either rile up the base and just done a red meat speech without having to go into sort of like the fake facts. Or he could have tried to sell like a softer version of himself. He could have just wooed that establishment media. There was no other audience out there. There was, you know, like if he had done that during the debate, it would have been very risky, of course, because it's possible Biden would be ready to controvert him on all those things. But if he hadn't done that stuff and just done it in the debate and Biden wasn't ready, that would have been a perfect place to do it, right? Because then you could put those lies out there and at least you'd have an audience that you could convince of this stuff. But instead, he does it, and if he had done it during a debate, then it would have been on Biden to fact check him instead of the media. But he does this to an audience where there's nobody who can – he can't win in that situation. It was a big miscalculation, I think, on his part.
Well, it was just unnecessary. That's right. What's so stupid right about it, is that he could have pointed to jobs lost. It's like he felt like he had to point to this plant in Janesville. Well, why not point to a plant in some other part of Wisconsin that closed during, you know, I'm sure there are others, you know. Right. We had a pretty rough economy there for a while and still do. It closed after Obama. Still do very much, yes. But the car industry, before the bailout, before the car industry was saved, there were plants closing left, right, and center. Why couldn't he have pointed to one in Ohio, a state they actually kind of need to win? Why couldn't he have pointed to one in Michigan or one in another part of Wisconsin? But no, he had to point to the one in his hometown, which is completely bogus. And sort of like, so these are what I would call unforced errors. and they just keep making them. It's just like the fact that they picked him to begin with. You know, when there were safe choices, Portman, Pawlenty, people like that, and there were risky choices. And if you were going to take a risky choice, in my view, he proved again last night, Marco Rubio was your choice.
Right.
He would bring a larger share of the Hispanic vote along with him. He would probably, considering how close Florida is, it may be the closest of all swing states right now, he tips the scales by a point that may be the race in Florida, and maybe he brings you Florida. You know, he's the same. He's so much of a better speaker than Paul Ryan. You can't even mention them in the same breath. Sure, he likes going on benders with the Florida Republican Party credit card, you know, for $100,000, and he gets foreclosed upon because he doesn't really act personally in the same way he tells the rest of us to act. But it's not like Paul Ryan doesn't bring a ton of baggage from his begging for stimulus funds, you know, even though he supposedly hates the stimulus, to all the Bush stuff he supported, all the budget busting stuff, and the rest of the stuff we've talked about with Ryan. So if you're gonna go that route, it seems to me that Rubio is a choice. So to me, Paul Ryan's an unforced error.
Well,
and now this convention is one too. All they've got left in terms of game changers are the debates. That's all they've got left.
Yeah.
You know, obviously short of any kind of a natural or man-made disaster or something coming out of a closet somewhere, some sort of, as they say in Washington, live boy, dead girl incident. I mean, there are things that can change dynamics.
Right. President Obama, let's face it, shows up on stage with Bill
holding
Ayers,
a dead girl.
Or, he should definitely not have Bill Ayers come on stage with him at the. I think, again, those type of unforced errors comes from a sense of desperation and a sense of loss. Now, with that said, I actually think that Romney's speech was pretty good.
Yeah, I think it's the best speech he could have given, and that's kind of I'll let you jump into seconds, but typically that was what I had predicted. Usually, to give credit where credit's due, these guys, George W. Bush is another one who is not a very good speaker, but they step up in big moments. And you've done a lot of live performances. I've done stuff live. The adrenaline flowing through you means that once you get past sort of any initial nerves, some stuff, often you will do a good job because it's a pretty big moment and you're pretty excited about it. And I'll give him credit. He did as good as he could have done. But let me let you jump in.
No, but I think that's right. I mean, I think, you know, remember this time last year, you and I were like, we were worried about Mitt Romney. We were worried about Mitt Romney. This is hard to remember, but we were worried about Mitt Romney because he had that ad out about President Obama saying that unemployed were a bump in the road. And we're like, you know, if he goes this route, this populist route, and just talks about jobs and that's it, he could be on to something. And he did some of that last night. I mean, Noam Schreiber had a great piece in TNR saying, like, well, you know, he shared his personal stuff, but he didn't really show. He basically laid it out like, this qualifies me to be president, rather than sort of explaining how these experiences will instruct his presidency. But leave that aside for a moment. He did what Alex Castellano said last night, an adequate job. I think that's what he said. He's like, he seemed to do it.
Look, I'll be honest. I'd even go past that. I would say for what the expectations were, they are for him, which were in the dumpster, and the speaking ability he has naturally, which isn't much. I mean, he still, even during the speech, even when he said some good lines, gave you that aw shucks puppy dog look that I think most people were like, my God, that's just annoying. You know, where after he says something mean, he has a sort of, I didn't really want to say it, but I had to, which is just this sort of this droopy sort of annoying thing that I don't think connects with people. But, you know, in the end, again, we're talking about Mitt Romney. He didn't throw up on himself.
Right.
He didn't reveal where secret bank accounts are. you know, there's a number of things that could have happened.
Yeah.
You know, and they didn't. So in the end, I think he gave a really good speech, but it doesn't matter. You know, I went this morning, as your listeners will really be interested in, know, to get my hair cut, important thing. And what's the first thing, you know, the guy's cutting my hair brings up to me? First thing is, because he knows I work in politics, is, oh my God, did you see the Clint Eastwood thing last night? I mean, I'm not saying, like, I'm not somebody who is around a water cooler. I work from home, so I can't claim to know what's going on at water coolers all over the country. What I can claim to know is, in my one interaction today with a human being that doesn't follow closely politics but follows closely enough, the one thing that was mentioned to me is, oh my God, did you see what Clint Eastwood did last night?
Indeed. Well, Cliff Schecter, we will end it on that note. Thank you so much for joining us today, and I'll talk to you next week.
Always my pleasure, Sam. And next Wednesday and Thursday, and then I'll be back next Friday.
Right.
3 days in a row. One can handle such.
We will have a link on our blog to your live broadcast from the DNC.
And I'm not going to say anything more about it, so I can back up and cover most of my body again.
Okay, great.
And have it only be the ankle that's showing. I'm learning from you, Sam. You're a show business pro.
Indeed.
Yes. All right. Well, thanks again, buddy.
All right. Talk to you later, Cliff. All right, folks, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Andy Kindler of Andy Kindler. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome back to this program, despite the fact that I know I'm going to take it a tremendous amount of abuse because how much of in love this guy is with Barack Obama.
Are you calling it to take me down? Were you calling me? And I thought it was about the Republican National Convention, but now you're going to turn it and do an in-depth takedown of me?
This is called an ambush.
Oh, my God.
Ladies and gentlemen, the great Andy Kindler, who has just returned from Tampa, Florida, which I believe is that's where you spend most of your vacations, isn't it?
That was the interesting thing. They called me, the David Letterman show called me, and they didn't have to pay for travel because I'm always there in August because I do a lot of stuff on the ground there.
Yeah, like on the ground, a lot of gardening.
Yeah, I was working for Bill Nelson. Is that right?
You do a lot of campaign work in Tampa in August. Right. Well, yeah. Exclusively. You bring the family.
And, of course,
there.
As everyone knows, me and you always meet in Orlando late August to go to Disney Place.
That's right. We go to Space Mountain together, and then we go to Epcot Center and have one of those Irish ales.
We sit around in Epcot Center, and we enjoy it ironically.
Yeah. Indeed, we just make fun of, hey, nice lederhosen. That's not even real lederhosen.
I know, and then what we say, lederhosen would be a funny Jerry Lewis word.
Right.
Now, are people going to at least listen to me this time? Because they're already writing in to complain about me.
You're already getting are you already getting a twit storm?
Yeah, is this the idiot who comes on and says Obama's good?
Now, before we do, you know what I forgot to tell you about this segment? Are you there? Andy? He hung up on me. Andy, you there? Somehow we just lost him. I got to call him back. I don't know what's going on, folks.
Radio back in the 30s.
Wait. I just had my technical music difficulty. What'd you do? Did you hang up on me?
No, I didn't. Unless somebody who lives in me is able to astral project anger. No, I touched nothing.
All right. Well,
I'm hands free. I'm hands free, Sam.
Are you? Well, of course you are. I knew that. I mean,
that's what I told my wife when I proposed to her.
Hello.
All right. Okay, I'm ready to go. I'm ready.
I just, we're getting towards Rosh Hashanah. I just blew the shofar for that joke.
Oh, I thought that was my phone acting up again. You have radio sound effects over there?
Sure, dude. The whole thing. It's almost as if this is real. It's almost as if someone's listening. Almost.
Where's your morning zoo person who says, I was over at TJ Cranberry's last night, Sam. Where were you?
Get on it.
I was drinking some Gingrich near beer.
Hey, how you doing, Sam? We're going to drink some Gingrich Deer beer as I was, took a crap on Clint Eastwood's head.
Were you were you down there last night?
No, I was gone, but I watched Clint Eastwood in the comfort of my home, and as I tweeted, he sold his invisible Obama bit to Jeff Dunham.
So
who's already made it a racist?
Right. Tell him.
That was his first move.
To make the whole chair bit racist?
Yeah. Well, first, then, see, I think Clint, at first he was going to say, I think he meant to say 4.5 years ago, Mr. Obama. First, I thought he was just insulting Obama, but he was trying to say that candidate was Mr. Obama, but then you were president. He had so many things to worry about during that bit, because first of all, he didn't have a bit, and he has a terrible sense of humor, and he has no delivery.
It was sad on so many different levels. But I want to hear first about, you were down there for 2 days. What did you do? Did you go on the floor?
I was on the floor. The worst part of the floor thing was on Tuesday. Tuesday was the first day, I think, where they had Tuesday or Wednesday. I think Tuesday. I was trying to shoot some stuff down there late. You know, when they start doing these speeches from, I don't know who these people are, but the atmosphere really felt like it's almost like that they planned the most, I don't know what you call that when it's like, let's take our country back. Is that like veiled racism or is it just
nationalism?
Or jingoism, but the way they talk, some of those early speakers, the way they talk about what Obama's doing, it's just I just feel it's all racial, and I felt like just really crummy on the floor. You know, I had to do comedy, and I don't have trouble doing comedy under normal circumstances, but I was just like I don't want to interview any of these people, even for fun.
It's, you know, I'll tell you something. That's it's interesting because I think. That's one of the hardest things, I think, you know, in my experience about doing comedy in the political context. It's just like some of what you're getting is so wrong, so offensive,
yeah,
that you almost don't want to joke about it because it diminishes, rather than exposing how wrong and offensive it is, it almost launders it in some way.
And the other thing I noticed that was just was beyond even politics was some of the early speakers, like there was some Secretary of State, and it wasn't Catherine Harris, but they had some Catherine Harris type figure talking early on that day. And then they had these local like Republican congressmen, I didn't even know who their name was, were, but they were so, they were like as if you were casting a community theater version of a politician. They were terrible speakers, and they were using all the buzzwords. And then when you see like Rubio last night, you go, like Rubio and those guys are like pros. They're evil, but they're pros in terms of the delivery.
Right. No, Rubio is very good at giving a speech, and I mean, I don't know. I've seen him speak once or twice before, and I thought he did it. I thought he was good. I mean, he was a good speaker. I mean, I didn't agree with anything he said, but good,
yeah,
speaker. Yeah. No, the backbenchers. There's a big drop off between senators and Congress people. I mean, there's a reason why they're Congress people as opposed to senators. There's a big drop off. And did you? So what did you do when you went around the floor? What kind of questions did you ask people?
We didn't do as many. We did this bit that, I mean, a lot of stuff didn't get to air, but we, you know, like the people had crazy costumes.
That's what this is about. This is what that's why you're doing this. You get take off.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
We should have done a pre-interview. Because I didn't know that this was trying to bring to the people the stuff they didn't see, because that's right, what they're hanging on. No, I mean, basically, we were, you know, I would like interview. Well, one guy was dressed as Wyatt Earp, right? So, I mean, there was a delegation. There was a Kansas delegation, and they were dressed
right,
like Wizard of Oz.
Right, Wizard of Oz, Wyatt Earp. Right. Yeah, and I mean, it gets bad.
Well, there was no wizard. There was the Wicked Witch was there, and Toadie. No, not Toadie. Dorothy was there. So, and then I say to the, you know, I look at the Wicked Witch, and I say, oh, the Wicked Witch, a Republican icon. So Wyatt Earp comes up to me in what I thought was a menacing way, and he says, what do you mean? What do you mean a Republican icon is the Wicked Witch? I said, well, I was just making a joke. He goes, oh, well, we like comedy.
I could just see that the sense of intimidation that you felt there. Did you feel like legitimately intimidated?
I felt legitimately. It's like, here's my thing. When white people are unusually upset about Obama, I always, not always, but many times there's racism behind it. Like John Lovitz. We used to love John Lovitz, didn't we, Sam?
Yeah, I know. What happened with that Lovitz thing where he's like, that asshole took all the, raised my taxes. Is that what he said?
And then he has he's incoherent about it, has no reasoning. But then I begin to think, I cannot believe he was ever this upset about any other Democratic guy. And so I always feel like there's a tinge of racism. So I really felt like that was on the floor, was that this whole we have to take this country back thing. It's like, and liberty and stuff that goes beyond just, our party's the best.
Well, I mean, look, there's definitely something going on there with John Lovitz, because he has never in his entire life paid less in taxes in terms of a percentage of his income. It's just not possible. Taxes are at their lowest levels for just about every single individual that is been since certainly before John Lovitz was born. And so he's obviously – there's something agitating him. Now, maybe it could be something else in his life, and he's just projecting it onto Obama.
Rationality behind any of it, because all the people, who when they're arguing – I mean, they're arguing that what socialism is – it seems to be like – because like isn't it Ryan who wants like no taxes at all on dividends or capital gains or anything like that? So they're basically saying it's un-American for anyone to pay any taxes, I think is what they're kind of saying.
That's ultimately
where they go.
And if
you say, why should you pay taxes, you're wrong.
Personally, I think all of the only legitimate criticism of Obama is on the left, and there's plenty to go around. We don't need to get into that, because I'm not going to sabotage. I'm not ambushing you on this.
But here was some scary stuff. Here was the scariest moments for me. I was sharing this, you go up to the CBS, there's a CBS box. Where you stand and you're giving your satellite feed, because we would do a package during the day, and then I would do like a live feed to New York when Dave's show is on the air, and you share. I mean, like you share the box. And so like there are people sometimes like a 2 feet away from you on the left. It's not like everybody hold the sound around me while I do my report.
Right.
There's people yelling in your ear as you're talking. And so the box next to me was the Glenn Beck box, next to the CBS box. Does he have a TV station?
Yeah, he has Glenn Beck TV, and he has a website. The
it's
Blaze.
It's called something, right?
The Blaze.
Yeah. So I turned to the right, and immediately, without even preparing, boom, Santorum's 3 feet away from me. That's not something you want to be able to see. You need some time for that.
Wait a second. The act or the guy?
No, Santorum was there. He was, because all these people were coming in.
The act or the guy?
Oh, you mean the Santorum act? I didn't know he had an act.
No. Oh, boy. Andy, what are you? How, Andy, were you like 5,000 years old? Do you not know?
No, tell me what I missed. Have I missed some kind of thing that was on, that might have been on Fridays or Saturday Night Live?
Dude, have you not ever Googled Santorum?
Oh, I see. I have Googled that. But you know what, though? I haven't really Googled it because some of those terms sound off-putting, and I don't know if I can take it. I'm older than you, Sam. Those words are like words. I'm afraid my mom would Google that.
You 8,000 years old? What do you mean you're older than me?
Look,
you're not that much older than me.
Was that was a savage thing, right? No, I am 8,000 years old. I'm not that much older than you, but I'm older enough than you that people in the business think – this might be my last years.
Just
no, but was that Dan Savage who started that thing?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so those are the type of words I don't want my mother to see because she can get very upset. It's too graphic. So no, I do know those words. But he was there, and then I looked to the right, and then Jan Brewer's there.
Oh my gosh!
And I don't want to. It's just
why are you so afraid of dealing with these people?
No, I'm not afraid. It's that, in a way, I don't know if I want to interview. I guess I would have interviewed anybody. I mean, I interviewed Herman Cain.
Yeah,
and
how did that go?
I said to him, he was being interviewed, and I said, and he goes, there is no sexual. Here's the way he talks.
There is no sexual war against women. And there is no war against women. And I will tell you why. He always does that. He sets right. you up. And I will explain to you exactly why. So I say, well, isn't there at least a skirmish against women? Right? He turns to me and goes, no. He takes me seriously. No, there is also no skirmish against women. He's like an audience club member one of my shows who's taking me literally. No.
And did you say, is there a kerfuffle against women? No. There is no kerfuffle either.
That's what I would have closed with kerfuffle.
Yeah, that's what you should. You got to bring me along next time, buddy. I'll just whisper that stuff into your ear. It's now say, is there a kerfuffle?
I did say to him, so I said, well, what about, would you consider 777? And I swear he goes, no, no, no.
Did you offer any other numbers up to him? So who else?
I said 777 or 666.
And who else did you talk to?
Well, I talked to David Gergen for 10 minutes, and he is.
I am fascinated as to what that conversation was.
Well, I asked him about George. You know, he hangs out with George Clooney, and he didn't give me. Let's just say this: he didn't give me a lot. David Gergen, and him. As I was talking to him, I was just thinking about how difficult it is to watch him as the senior political analyst.
Wait a second, Gergen hangs out with George Clooney?
Well, yeah. You see, I was watching David Letterman one night, and George Clooney was talking about how he has his place in Italy, and a lot of people go over there. And then David Gergen, I guess, went over there, and he swam naked in the – not naked in the lake, but they all swim in the lake. I don't know why. I don't know
why. Clooney has a place in Italy, and Gergen's skinny dipping there?
Well, not skinny dipping. I don't want to say skinny dipping. I'm saying they jump – they do, like, all kinds of pranks or something, and Gergen jumped in the lake, or someone said, you won't swim in the lake, and he did. But, I mean, I can't picture
Clooney. I'm a little concerned that you might be getting senile, Andy.
Oh, maybe it wasn't David Gergen. Maybe I wasn't in Tampa. But the other thing is, here is one thing that I get excited about because I'm a political junkie. I know everybody. Like, I was like, oh, my God, this David Korn in the Google Lounge. I was too shy to walk up to him.
Wow. No, you should have done that.
I know. But then some of these guys, like, I'm afraid they're going to yell at me.
You think David
Evan
Korn
Handler
is
was
yell
there,
you?
Sam. Evan Handler.
Evan Handler?
He was down there.
Who's that?
I don't know. You know that guy. He was on Sex and the City, and he was fawning over Ariana. I saw a lot of people on my plane. Ariana Huffington was on my plane.
Yeah.
Mayor Antonio Villar. And everyone is seems to fawn over
Ariana
Huffington.
What's the name of the mayor?
Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa? It's not Villaraigosa, right?
What? Yes, yeah, Via. Now I can't say it. Villagrosa. Villagrosa. What?
Villaraigosa.
And everybody, he was saying next to Ariana Huffington. Can you imagine what an exciting flight this was for me?
I can only imagine, Andy. This is. And now what do? You go to Just for Laughs, right? Is that where you're heading now?
Going to Just for Laughs in at the end, after. It's senile. And we'll be back with more of Senile Andy. I'm still performing live, right, Sam?
Right.
Are we allowed to use the word senile, or is that considered quaint now?
Whatever. It doesn't matter. Either way.
I don't want to say that my arteries are hard. Sam, I'm at the age where I need to do a lot more prostate humor.
Yeah, I understand. Well, that's going to be your big that's going to be the big selling point, right? As soon as you start doing like beta prostate, you start selling like vitamins and stuff like that.
The best one is the one that Joe Theismann sells,
that was sort of disturbing. Where he says like he gets up and he says like, you know, I do a lot of commentary, and it used to be every time I would do commentary in a new sports stadium, I'd have to find the bathroom first.
Right.
Sam,
am I old that when I watch those commercials, I start to wonder, do I have those symptoms? Does that make me old?
Well, if you have to wonder, Andy, then you probably don't. You know, one of the things I didn't tell you, Andy, and I neglected to remind
everybody.
You of, that what I do on Fridays is I have people come on and tell me, recommend a movie that I should watch on Netflix streaming or on Amazon streaming because – you know, my wife doesn't let me go out of the house, and neither does my child.
I forgot
to tell you about that. But
yeah,
what movie would
you can't do any better than Game Change.
You love Heilman, right? Who do you like better, Heilman or Halpern? Which is your favorite?
Yeah. Wow. I don't know. I mean, you think Heilman, yeah, Heilman's probably better than Halpern. I think definitely.
Well, Heilman's better than Halpern, but he still did this the other day about how he does the false equivalent. He's a false equivalency shtick guy. Yeah, both sides are saying horrible things with impunity.
Now,
oh, really? Both sides?
Now,
exactly,
Andy,
the same?
This is an opportunity. You really hated Dylan Radigan, didn't you?
Oh, he was the worst. Oh,
why did you hate Dylan Radigan so much? I mean, I feel like every tweet I ever saw you tweet over the past year and a half was something like, "You're Dylan Radigan, you're the worst."
Well, don't say – now you're just commenting on the poor quality of my tweets, which I think I'm attending to be humorous.
I'm sure.
Well,
Dylan
Radigan
delivered it in a funnier way. It's really the delivery. You certainly are the worst.
Yeah, but he says like he's the one that said he's tired. Remember he had that website, "I'm tired, I can't take it anymore." That one, or was that the Howard Beale thing?
Yeah.
He's, doesn't he realize that Howard Beale is not a positive character? We're supposed to not like Howard Beale, or at least be worried about Howard Beale. Now, the thing that bothered me about him was the constant lecturing. He would just open up, and then he would just assume that everybody was the same on both sides. That they're look, the Democrats. You know, when he says stuff like, "Well, the Democrats had a chance; they were in charge." Is that really true that the Democrats were in charge for 2 years? And then so he starts with a big lecture, and he calls his show the DR show. Right there, that's enough to build bile up. And so I just thought he was unrelentingly sanctimonious, narcissistic, and thinking that America was like, we need Dylan Radigan to clean this up, and maybe he could hold extremely boring forums around the country with his steel wheels tour, and he could go into some factory floor, and he could introduce someone and pontificate to them for 20 minutes. Tell me the upside of Dylan Radigan.
The upside of Dylan Radigan that I always felt was that he was sufficiently skeptical and angry about the financial markets, the banks, and on some level appreciated that we have a real problem with the establishment redistributing wealth upwards. I think I think things got convoluted after that.
Yeah, but he also,
You and I have a very
I believe he knows
different
more,
political
sorry.
Orientation. You realize that, right?
No, but even put that aside. But let's put that aside. Because, you know, it's so easy for me to put my actual opinions aside and to look at things objectively. No, I stipulate to you, I just want to use the word stipulate, that he does have knowledge, say, in, like, financial things. He also doesn't explain them. He either explains them not well or he simplistically just, you know, it's like, okay, here's the way the entire world situation works. These banks tell us what to do, bling, bling. And it's like everything is too simple. And also, I don't know what he's talking about. It's a double whammy.
I think there's some legitimacy to that critique as well.
And what is he? And also, he said when he left, he was like, oh, I didn't he pretend that he was left under his own power?
No, you know what? I think he did.
He did?
I think he did. I think, you know, my sense is that they wanted to probably, I mean, he was getting paid a lot of money there. And my sense is that they wanted to pay him a little less and maybe switch him around on the schedule. And I think before they even got into that, I think he was like, you know what? I'm done.
Right.
And, you know, I always have more respect for people who quit their jobs than anything else.
Yeah. Hey, nobody's quit more. No one's quit more jobs than me. No one has sabotaged more projects than me.
That's
you know what I mean.
That's why I respect you so much, because you.
Andy,
really,
you're going
you
on
really
the air in five minutes.
You really will burn down the house.
I will burn bridges. Yeah. I will go. First of all, I'll start on people that everyone agrees with that they don't like. I'll start with your Dane Cooks and your Jay Leno, and then boom, I'm talking about Louis C.K. in 10 minutes. And everyone's leaving.
Right, exactly. Then you cannot stop. And
I cannot stop.
Nobody bites the hand. Nobody bites the hand that feeds them more than you. Right?
Yeah, nobody does that. But let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Why do they start off the day with Morning Joe? What do you think? Is there anybody in charge of MSNBC? Is it on a computer program? Is it a software app? Do they have a mobile app that runs the network? MSNBC 2.0 or something.
He
just
speaks to
in.
The establishment Beltway media. That's what that's about.
Is he the poor man's Imus? Tell me what he is exactly.
I think he's the rich man's Imus.
That's why I should have gone that way. Is he the palatable man's Imus? Is he the guy who likes Imus but isn't racist?
I think he's the rich man's Imus. I think that's his whole shtick.
But does anybody besides us think it's the most horrible? I mean, I wish MSNBC was the left wing version of Fox.
Right. Right.
I'd watch it then.
Well, would you watch the shows at night or no?
I watch everything. Yeah, I do. I do enjoy Rachel. I can't even believe that I enjoy Martin Bashir. If you had told me years ago, Sam, that I would be and say,
fascinating.
I gotta go,
you know,
honey. Martin
Bashir's
on.
You know why you enjoy Martin Bashir now? Because
he's on my side.
Because I gotta say the MSNBC lineup, particularly during the week, is extremely pro Obama now. I mean, that's part of the reason why I think Rattigan was sort of like, you know, thinking, I mean, you are like a full-on Obama bot. You realize that, right?
I am wearing right now, yes, we can, T-shirt and forward shorts.
Yeah. But you're having, you just coincidentally, you're wearing them backwards. But that's a different issue.
Hey, Sam, let me ask you the question. Do you say when you're doing your on the radio, do you use these horrible expressions like I see Alex Wagner say, like, all right, let's unpack this? You don't unpack things, do you?
I say unpack. I say at the end of the day, but that's more of like a Hollywood expression. I say,
do you push back? Do you push back?
No, I don't push back, but I say be that as it may. Do I say push back? I mean, I use the word push back, but I don't ever say I'm going to push back on that.
Yeah, I don't like the unpack thing. I think if you know what's good when you use unpack? Let's say you got back from a trip and you're telling your wife, I didn't want to unpack my luggage. That's how I would use it.
Right, right. No, I get
it. Am I getting laughs? Am I on a delay?
Well, you know, you can't hear the audience. Maybe that's for the best, though.
That was the name of my first CD, remember? I can't hear the audience.
That's right. Wasn't that?
And then
like
the second
like
CD, should I continue even though I don't seem to be getting a response? How about this, though, Sam? What was G.E. Smith, your hero? All these people, how big was that payday that you agreed to play at the Republican National Convention?
What's, you know what? I think if you're G.E. Smith, I think if you're G.E. Smith, I think it probably doesn't have to be that big.
In other words, he gave him a good deal.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like, there was probably some other competition between him and, what was that guy's name, Doc Severin? Who was the guy?
It wasn't Doc Severinson.
No, I can't remember. But I mean, yeah. You know what I'm saying. I mean, listen.
And I was on a plane with Night Ranger. The guy from Night Ranger had come back. He had just done a gig there, and these people from a Georgia delegation.
I'm surprised
were, like,
Jim Belushi didn't go down and be the house band down there.
That would have been great. He's my favorite. You know, is it wrong to say that Jim Belushi is my favorite musician?
No, it just depends on really what it is that you're looking for in a musician.
I'm looking for someone who is, I don't know.
Are you going to go to the DNC? Are you going to cover?
No, I don't, because Biff Henderson goes. But did you ever hear my Jim Belushi joke?
No. Who
died and made Jim Belushi a big star?
You know, I'm not even going to talk
too soon?
It.
Too soon?
No. I'm still smarting over. You know, I was cast on the pilot of According to Jim. You know that, right?
That's a total lie.
No. I shot the pilot. I was supposed to be, what's her name? The Courtney Thorne Smith's brother. And I was in a full-on panic because I was supposed to be in second position. But my agent at the time at UTA, who you knew, I think you know, she forgot I had a lawyer and that I had a deal with NBC.
I know when you said she, I know who it is then.
Yeah, and so I was.
She forgot you had a lawyer.
Yeah. Like the one time in my life, I wasn't neurotic about reading my contract, and I'm like, I said to the casting agent as I'm going in right before the test, I said, "Did this go to my lawyer?" And she's like, I don't know. And I said, because I think I'm supposed to be in second position for this. And she said, well, they want you in the room. You got to go in now. You know, like I'm at ABC. And I go in, I get the part. I find out that my agent has forgot that I had a lawyer and forgot that I had a deal with NBC Studios. And so I'm on the show. And the deal with NBC Studios was to do Beat Cops, which was a show that I wrote.
And, I saw it, I think. And, is that the one with H. John Benjamin?
Yeah. And we did two versions, but this one was with Conoco. And so I'm trying to get fired from the show. And the big joke was that Courtney Thorne Smith came on after me. And I, you know, look, I'm not as Jewish as you, with all due respect.
You're a handsome version of me, but, and you could also play Italian.
But I'm not Courtney Thorne Smith's brother. And
no, absolutely not.
And so the big joke was that I was adopted, but I figured, like, the way for me to get off this show is to really do a lot of, like, you know, I have a range in which I can do my comedy, from ranging from extremely Jewish to, you know, very Jewish. And so I did the extremely Jewish version where I'm really gesticulating a lot. And like at one point, the director literally had to come up to me and go, Sam, do you feel like you're using your hands a lot? And I went, no. And I was like, frankly, doing Jackie Mason in every scene I had with Jim. And I set my phone to If I Were a Rich Man, and I had Benjamin call me constantly on the set with the hopes of just sort of reminding people that I was just not a fit here. And I managed to get fired dodged a bullet. I mean, granted,
so lucky.
It would have been a gold-plated bullet that I would have millions of dollars now, but it would have been a bullet nevertheless. I mean, you understand.
You would have killed yourself. Also, I heard you were getting calls from John Lithgow telling you to take it down a notch during
yes. Sam, play it a little more subtle.
And you would have had to do fart jokes. Like, they have the whole every episode is 8 to 12 minutes of pull my finger jokes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was, and those were the ones that he ad-libbed.
That show, there were many terrible shows, and that show really is up there.
There was a scene at the end of the pilot, because I never watched the show. I watched the show once after that, and it was like their 9/11 tribute show, and I almost just like fell apart when I saw that. But
you mean because of emotions?
Yeah, just
emotional.
Yeah, it almost broke me up to watch them. It was really just disturbing. But at the end of the pilot, Jim Belushi takes his shirt off, bangs his chest like this, and then gets on top of Courtney Thorne Smith. And there's nothing that seems so wrong. Like it's like as if, like, literally the bed could have floated to the sky, like all the gravity in the set could have just gone away and things would have seemed more normal than him on top of Courtney Thorne Smith. And apparently in the writer's room, they called that the rape scene. Like literally, just sort of like it was so wrong. Just so inappropriate that impossible to imagine.
You know what, Sam? I had tickets to see the Blues Brothers later this month with him again, and I'm like, I can't go now.
Did you really have tickets for that?
No. I don't have tickets.
Well, Andy, what movie should I see?
Oh,
Blues Brothers 3.
You know, you're talking to the wrong person. But this could this be
what
a movie
you've
that
never
was
seen
like,
a movie?
Already out? A movie that was out already?
Yeah, a movie that's been out for a long time, not a new one that you've seen, like one.
Okay, I saw this on the plane, so I can't tell, and I wouldn't have thought I liked this movie, but I did really enjoy Jeff Who Lives at Home.
What?
Don't be mean to my choice.
Don't you have like a movie that like somebody like an alien came down and said, "What movie should I watch?"
Oh, you mean a great classic movie?
Yeah, like a good movie that I should watch. Like, I don't get to watch movies much, so give me a good movie to watch.
Well, then I'm going to go back in the vault with Modern Romance. You've seen all those, right?
Yeah, I've seen it, but Modern Romance is a good movie. Why should we watch that?
Is this Desert Island Discs? What show am I on?
Come on.
I don't watch. I'm not Doug Benson. I don't see anything. I would say, have you seen Annie Hall?
Well, Andy, it was great having you on.
No, Sam, this is not the way it's going to go down. What Jeff Who Lives at Home, I think, was a good movie. It was a nice little movie.
All right, Jeff
Crazy Stupid Love. How about Crazy Stupid Love? These are movies I wouldn't have expected would be good. That was also a very good movie. Oh, people are going to hate me worse now. They're going to hate me worse than before, Sam. They're going to hate me and think I'm a hack.
Well, nobody in who listens to the show is in any position to give you a job, so don't worry about that.
I'm laughing like a smoker.
There's nothing like an Obama bot who can't pick a movie.
I like Obama. I hope he gets four more years. Please vote for him. Please, progressives. No, Glenn Greenwald. I will not listen to you, Glenn Greenwald.
Andy Kindler, thank you so much.
I like drones. I like drones. I like drones. That guy who was arrested for leaking the WikiLeaks, yeah. He probably did something wrong.
Oh, Jesus. All right, Andy.
I love you, man. Right, I love you, Sam.
I love you, too. I appreciate it.
Okay, be good.
On. Take it easy.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, Andy Kindler. Andy Kindler, yes. I don't have my applause button. Where is it? I must have it somewhere. I don't... Oh, boy. All right, folks. Well, I guess we'll just go into, let's take a quick break, but maybe we'll do a Freebie Friday today. Music, maestro, thank you. We are back, Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, 646-257-3920. If you want to be part of the program, you can IM me at Majority FM. I have some type of infection in my ear. I can't tell if I have just an earache or if it's part of a sinus infection, but I'm going to have to go on antibiotics.
It looks like Sam was checking his head to make sure it was attached correctly.
Yeah, no, I'm not well. I work too hard for you folks. I'm working myself to the bone. People tell me that, actually. People do say, like, what are you doing that? Why aren't... That's just the way I am, folks. That's just the way I am. I'm obsessive compulsive. Matt Graham, this comedian from Boston, had a joke that I still remember. And I probably heard it 20 years ago. Was, I'm a workaholic. Which is why I can never work. And that's basically my problem. So here's a wonderfully heartwarming story about a woman named Gina Rinehart. She is the world's wealthiest woman. She has, I don't know how much money she has.
I think $60
billion. $60 billion. And now, to be fair, $60 billion does not go as far as it used to. $60 billion used to be a tremendous amount of money, and now it's still a lot. I'm not going to say it's not a lot of money, but it is a healthy, it just doesn't go as far as it used to. And she has some advice for those of you who are not $60 billion anaires, I guess. Is it $60 billion? Is it really $60
billion? I'm sorry. I think it's
$30 billion. Okay. Ugh. That changes everything.
I'm sorry.
$30 billion.
Now it all makes sense.
Now, she made her money from her family had iron ore prospecting mines. And she has some advice. If you're jealous of those with more money, don't just sit there and complain. Apparently, she said this in a magazine piece as reported by the LA Times. Do something to make more money yourself. Spend less time drinking or smoking and socializing and more time working. Now, Reinhardt knows of what she speaks, ladies and gentlemen, because if you think that $30 billion just grows on trees, well, you're wrong. It doesn't grow on trees. Well, I mean, it grows on her family tree. She inherited. She inherited the money. She didn't actually do any of the mining herself. She inherited it. Now,
she didn't even do any of the business part of the mining.
Did she really business. Not? Are you
I
sure?
Mean, she just inherited the money.
Well, she inherited the money. She says there is no monopoly on becoming a millionaire. Become one of those people who work hard, invest and build, and at the same time create employment and opportunities for others. See, there's no monopoly on that. I mean, there's a slight tightening of the market of those people who can inherit money, but it's not a monopoly. Why are people poor? Well, she says she blames socialist anti-business government policies. Now, she's in Australia, so she urged Australian officials to lower the minimum wage and cut taxes. The millionaires and billionaires who choose to invest in Australia are actually those who must help, who most help the poor and are young. This secret needs to be spread widely. Indeed, I bet. Well, she's a great spokeswoman for that secret, and I'm sure it'll get out there, and I'm sure the peasants in Australia will appreciate her largesse. Unbelievable.
Work harder for less and you'll become a millionaire somehow.
Now, we got to go to the phones because I have a theory. You know how we used to think that Jermo was Eddie Pepitone? I have an alternate theory. Jermo, is this you?
Hi, Sammy. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Is it Andy Kindler? He calls back.
I think it possibly is.
Jermo.
Yes. Sammy. Yeah. We got a bad line, I think.
Yeah, do we?
I can't hear you.
You can't?
Listen, I can hear you now.
Okay.
Listen, I want to apologize. I owe you an apology.
For not having the movie from the last segment?
The other day.
Which joke?
No, my apology is the other day when you were sick and I made the joke about your daughter saying I was thankful to your daughter that she got you sick. I was working 12-hour shifts last week. I was exhausted. I drank too much wine the night before, and I said, I really apologize. I'm sorry I said that, because you were very sick.
All right,
that
well, was really I've been waiting for this apology, and so now I got it, and I appreciate it. It's a little late in coming.
That's very nice.
It's been a tough couple of days.
Stan.
Yeah?
I think I talk too much. I probably take too much of your time.
No.
And I said, let it go. But I'm going to have to apologize to this man.
Well, I appreciate it.
Thank you for accepting my apology.
I was not actually that angry about it, but I got to tell you, these things, you know how it is. But hey, come on, Jermo, are you Andy Kindler?
What?
Andy.
Well, I replayed it. I replayed it, and I said, man, he's mad. But that was good. That was a good segment with you guys. I don't know who he is, though. I really don't know who he is, but he's funny.
It's funny how you guys were not on the phone at the same time.
Listen, I got to say, you did a great job last night. I really enjoyed that show.
I'm glad. Well, we're going to put it out as a podcast. All right, Jeremy, let me jump and get some items.
One thing. Real quick, though. Sammy, real quick. I took your lead on watching the convention. Sammy, who cares?
Right?
Who cares? These guys are all a bunch of creeps.
Right. It was interesting, but it was right. And I'm not terribly thrilled about the DNC either, frankly. But you know, it is what it is. We got to cover it. It's somewhat relevant. But hopefully the DNC will be a little more interesting.
Thanks, Sammy. Take care, Jeremy.
Now. Bye-bye.
Have a nice weekend.
You too.
Take care, buddy. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I like how you're promoting our RNC podcast, and then he follows it up with, RNC, who cares?
Right. Exactly. That's all right. Jay Tingle reminds me that Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid was Peckinpah, not Altman, right? It was Sam Peckinpah, one of the best Westerns ever shot, in my estimation. Left Coast Marcus, last night was the first of the convention I watched on TV. I was shocked at what I saw. First, I thought I was watching a canonization of St. Mid of Baindom. The bullshit heartstring stories were so saccharine, I felt a bout of diabetes coming on. The rest of it was truly disgusting, display of nasty, hateful vitriol. I know that's what they're all about, but haven't seen it concentrated before. This group is like a bully in the schoolyard who grabs your arm, hits you in the head with it, and says, stop punching yourself. Why are you punching yourself? When Clint Eastwood was on stage, I thought someone had left the stage door open at the Alzheimer's Award, and he had wandered on stage. That was pathetic. There was not one word of substance, no idea what the platform is, just lies, hate, and hypocrisy. Shame on RNC. I know you don't care, but you represent everything that the rest of the world hates about your country. Thanks for letting me rant. I feel better now. Maybe Clint was sent out to be so horrible so that even if Mitt shit himself on stage, he would still look good. Very possibly. Primer! Oh, wonderful to hear. Wahaha, you don't really consider yourself to be a political analyst, do you? Your opinions will cause Clint Eastwood to sleep tonight? Wahaha. No, I don't imagine Clint Eastwood would lose sleep, but yeah, I do consider myself to be a political analyst. I mean, people have paid me to do so, provide political analysis. You might disagree that I'm a good one or not, but... Oh, here we go. Primer. Bringing it. Are you ready? Ladies and gentlemen, if you have any kids who are around the podcast now, please cover their ears. Primer, our longtime Republican troll, is going to weigh in on the Todd Akin thing, and this is not going to be safe for work language. I don't know that I've ever seen Primer this way, but I do. I've always sensed there's an undercurrent of misogyny, and I think we're about to hear it. Todd Akin will still kick cunt Claire's ass. Missourians hate her. Now, Primer, let me ask you a question. Why did you feel it necessary to refer to Claire McCaskill's sexual organs in such a way? Or at all? I don't know.
Maybe conservatives countrywide are on a bit of a Clint Eastwood crazy kick today.
Yeah. Hmm. Primer seems mad. He seems mad. This is basically the same thing that brought Clint Eastwood to the convention. The same level of sort of like feeling of loss of manhood. And how do I regenerate this manhood? I shoot myself up with a shot of Clint Eastwood, or I show that I can still sort of, you know, rile up that misogyny. It is sort of fascinating that Primer himself is sort of a metaphor for what we've been talking about. And he writes in, why are your guests as moronic as you? Well, it would rather be weird if I didn't have guests who weren't reflective of that. Do you seek each other out to reinforce your collective libtard stupidity? Ask Obama about our additional 7 states. I don't get that, but you say, wahahaha. Because
you know that time Obama accidentally said there were like 57 states or something like that.
You and your dumbass guests are not going to be happy after November 6th. Bwahahaha. Have you learned to control your racism yet? Comedy. Ah, that explains you and your silly little show. You're trying to be funny, right? You're some sort of clown? Yeah, I'm some sort of clown. Indeed, Primer. Wow. Primer, the number is 646-257-3920. Nothing would make us happier, of course, than to have you call in, which, of course, is why you won't. I know.
You know, one day Primer will call in and we'll discover it is Jeremo, a.k.a. Andy Kindler.
Right. Thanks for weighing in, Primer. That was definitely special.
Did you ever see there was that Patton Oswalt movie a couple years ago?
Fan.
Yeah. That's the image I have of Primer.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I don't think that he's that sort of dynamic. 727, when Romney was shaking hands on his way to the podium, he shook hands with David Koch and pointed at him. Cameras switched away to girls cheering when that happened, so people in living rooms couldn't see. 727, why is anyone surprised that the speakers never talked about Romney and only themselves? They practice what Ayn Rand preached, total selfishness. Christie even said we should not love. Rand saw love as evil. Interesting. Bush in chains, a veiled threat from future President Romney advisor Hubbard. More quantitative easing from Fed would be a mistake. Oh, yeah. Well, they're very afraid of the Fed loosening in any way prior to the election, because it in some way could theoretically help at least economic indicators. Bush and chains, have you not seen the raft of articles talking about there is no inflation to be worried about? I'm just curious. A square. Sam, what a parade of crazy this week. Thanks for excellent coverage and analysis, and also for putting together last week's shows in the midst of your cold, a show far for MR. Gotta say, Clint Eastwood made my day. What were Republicans thinking? If he had a personal story to tell about Romney, that may have been effective, but to place him in the lineup last night with a pseudo-comedy bit, not sure what they were going for. Overall, I noted the same thing you did. The production quality of this convention was low and small. It really was. Heathen Steve, Stephen, didn't we boycott the 1980 Olympics? You're right. It was the 1984 Olympics. That was we boycotted the 1980 Summer Olympics. We did not boycott the Winter Olympics. Huh? What do you think, Primer? Into architecture. That was an unfortunate metaphor. You're not supposed to be using penis pumps. Men who use penis pumps too much, their penises look like logs of hamburger. You brought it up. Well, I know. That was exactly the point, is that something went awry. Into architecture, they've done studies and found that humans are incapable of conceptualizing numbers larger than about 60 million. So 60 million, 60 billion, it's all the same in our minds. It's an inconceivable amount of money that no one has a right to. I can't really conceive of 60 million. I mean, I guess I can. I guess I've probably seen $5 million homes. I've been in an apartment in New York City. I mean, it's not hard to go into an apartment in New York City that isn't like a $3 million apartment. I mean, I bet the apartment I owned in the late 90s, or actually early 2000s, mid-2000s nearly, is worth close to $1 million now. And I can imagine 60 of those apartments. Kaiser Zoza, hey Sam, sorry for the stream of consciousness last night. After Eastwood, I started drinking and kept drinking. Laughing my ass off, Andy Kindler, I am an Obama bot. Sugar High 777, happy Friday, Sam. Dogtooth is still on Netflix. Right! I got that on my list. It's been a long time since you had a mind-blowing art film to talk about. Oh, and guess what? Matthew Film Guy will be excited to hear this. I had watched Elite Squad 2, and it wasn't streaming on Netflix, but then it was streaming on Amazon, and I rented it, and I watched Elite Squad 1. I'm not going to say anything else. We'll talk about it later. So have you heard Rocky Mountain Mike yet? Has heard on Stephanie Miller? No, I haven't. Do we have a song from Jimmy Reefer Cake? We never pulled it.
We do.
We pulled it?
Yep, give me 1 second.
All right.
I got it.
Let's play it.
Here we go.
All right. Jimmy Reefer Cake sent us in something late, and then we got all upset. Go ahead.
All right, here we go.
I'm still voting for Obama, but it's gonna be a hard thing to do. If he keeps up with these pot rings, the torture and hypocrisy, I might forget the votes are tuned out and got no hope. Now I'm still voting for Obama. A little bit of change can mean a lot. no more pre-existing conditions, acceptance of our gay friends. Maybe I'm dreaming, we'll still all day be smoking legal pot. We'll be smoking legal pot.
I bet Obama wished that weed was legal when he was smoking and smoking and smoking and smoking it.
Still voting for Obama. Little bit of hope is better than none. Pass around the Obamacare. My friends, it's all we got. Thanks to Republican obstructionism.
Amen.
So won't you please pass around the Obamacare so I can remember how to dream. Pass around the Obamacare. Things are not as bad as they seem.
Well, Jimmy Reeferke.
Where'd the applause come from?
I found it. Jimmy Reeferke. I gotta say, Jimmy's obviously like trying to sneak in longer than 1 minute songs by unofficially offering up these songs to us. It was pretty good. I liked it. Gatteron, Romney, as you point out, is a terrible candidate. He can't talk about his rapacious business experience, his taxes, his bizarre religion, or when he was governor, more liberal than Ted Kennedy. He can't even talk about his dog. Obama should run an ad where he's simply petting Bo and then look up at the camera and smile. That's a good point. I'm not going to be able to take any more phone calls. Two-year-old snot-nosed kid. What a great show. What a great, great show. What a great, great show. Oh, thank you. Dave with Dignity. Holy shit, Sam. Andy's Belushi joke was the perfect joke. Made this guy's day. Okajik. Hi, Sam. You and Andy are hilarious. I like drones. I had smoker's cough by the end. I think Romney won over a handful of voters last night. He did better than anyone expected. I also think they put Eastwood up there for iconic prestige. I think they figured his bit would be funny and hip, but it really backfired. Also, last night program audio drowned out your commentary. You want to check that for your damn coverage. Are we sure about that? No.
What? Did just the commentary dropped out? That's not possible. Is that what he's saying?
He's saying that my commentary, people couldn't hear my commentary.
Maybe it was low at points when they were getting loud.
Hopefully not. I love drones. I love drones. I love drones. Man, I have on Andy on regularly. It's a great break from all of our collective earnestness. Now the ha-ha-ha in above feels weird because of Primer's constant wah-ha-ha. David, Jeff, who lives at home, was a pretty decent film. Try Ides of March if you're looking for a political thriller. Oh, yeah. I know it's not good. I know it's overrated, but it's just like one of those. It's a good movie. It's a good airplane film. Tom Prackman, Sam, here's my movie suggestion for you. House of Games. Seen it. Genghis, a trilogy, then watch Genghis, a trilogy film based on the life of Genghis Khan. The other two films are still in development. Simply great to watch. The film is called Mongol, by the way. Maybe I will. V. Rocco, why do right-wingers like saying the C word so much? Primer, go F yourself. Primer's the dumbest right-wing troll ever. I know. Hey, Sam, I IM'd Rocky Mountain Mike's bone finger a few days ago. You did? Romney's pitch boils down to Obama failed your high expectations. I'll exceed your low ones. That's a great line. I'll steal that. I guess if I were to write their campaign slogan, it might be Romney Ryan. Less is more. Chem Champion. My computer is acting up. And my head is hurting. Bear with me one more second. Okay. Chem Champion, there was a bit on NPR talking about the history of political conventions, playing pieces from Hubert Humphrey's speech in 1948,
vehement support of civil rights in Barbara Jordan's first African-American keynote speech in 76. The piece was probably more conducive to NPR, but it was only 10 minutes. Personally, I'd like it if you do a lengthy piece on the history of conventions. You know, back when they were interesting. Yeah, I'll talk to Kevin Baker, maybe, if he can do that. Lawrence O'Donnell posits, one of the reasons why Romney doesn't want to release his tax returns is either he didn't pay as many Mormon tithes as he says he has, or, God bless you, he uses a different number for his income reported to the Mormon Church rather than the government. Might not be all that in there, but I think that's actually pretty probable. It's possible. PF1800, did any of the speakers at the RNC mention the troops in Iraq or Afghanistan? The ones I heard didn't. I don't think so. Tweet is the only mention I've seen so far. Grant's Frank Erutka wrote, if only someone had written a book about invisibility and the African-American experience. Jeb Batrist. Grant Bargain Watch. Koch says he's open to tax increases to balance the budgets. Ooh, yike. Yikes. You know, the thing is, they know it's always easier to cut taxes than it is to cut Social Security and Medicare. So if you got a shot at it, you take it. Gene Reinhardt, Australian peasant here. This is the world's richest woman. Very much appreciated latest Gina Reinhardt ad dive on how to become grossly rich. Don't know if you've read her actual real-life poem that is real, but here it is. Nothing's there. You're going to have to email it to me at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Andy can't be a bot. Bots are very serious, which is part of the problem with them. He's hilarious. I hope he can be a regular on the show. Wow. Big turnaround. And Bush and Chains will get the final IM of the week. It's easy to conceptualize $1 billion. It's about a full pallet of 100 bills. It's the power that a billion brings that people can't grasp. Please stop with the inflation thing. You have so have confused me with a libertarian. And then we're going to have to do one more, martini shot. Have you ever seen The Americanization of Emily? James Garner is wonderful in it. Well, check it out, Avedon. All right, folks. No show on Monday. We will, for members, we will have for you last night's coverage. If you want to hear it, particularly the Catherine Harris thing, definitely worth a listen to. We will also, on Monday, we will have not a live show, but we will have a compilation, same compilation of speeches that we, labor speeches that we presented last year. Hope you'll enjoy. I'm sorry I couldn't get more together, but I'm sick and I'm a little bit tired. See you live on Tuesday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught.